Welcome to the My Crazy Office podcast with the authors of Working With You Is Killing Me, Working For You Isn't Working For Me, and Mean Girls at Work, Kathy Elster and Catherine Crowley. They're committed to creating world peace, one crazy office at a time. And now, here are Kathy and Catherine.
Hey everyone, I'm Kathy Elster.
And I'm Catherine Crowley, and welcome to My Crazy Office.
Today we're going to address the topic of leaving a job that you've been at for a long time. Mm-hmm. Our first question comes from an employee who knows it's time to leave but has trouble taking consistent job hunting actions. Something I see a lot.
Yeah.
Our second question comes from a boss who believes that one of her long-term employees needs to move on, but isn't sure how to broach the subject.
Leaving a job that you've been at for too long can be like breaking up from a mediocre dating relationship.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. We love to talk about your dating world.
I do because I think there's such a parallel that where you know you need to leave, but it's still really hard to do the actual breaking up.
Kathy just leaves.
Yeah. I just leave. I know.
Well, maybe it's for
when
me.
I'm ready to go.
Anyway, we can go to our first question.
Yeah, let's go to our first question.
I've been working for 8 years as a sound engineer for a recording studio, and ever since they changed management 3 years ago, I've been miserable. I go through spurts of looking for a new job. I'll identify one job that looks good and apply for it, but when I don't get it, I give up. I know that the longer I stay here, the more hopeless I feel. What can I do to kickstart a true job search?
I hear this a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I don't always know how to support people like this.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so clear that they need to move on, and they take a step and it doesn't work out, and they just take that as, oh, that's the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I don't really understand why that doesn't propel them. You probably know why they stop. Okay.
Yeah, so usually it has to do with the fact that their confidence level is not very mm-hmm. high to begin with, and they, underneath the being unhappy, they actually don't believe anyone else wants them.
Mm-hmm.
So you do actually have to do some work on that internal setting because, as we often talk about, you, in order to pursue any job, you need a certain level of rejection resilience, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to hear no. But I think the other piece, Kathy, is that when someone's confidence is low and if they're working hard at a job, then they forget to do what you always remind us, which is to build their network.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do they fear, it sounds in this one, you know, very often that kind of person may see something on Monster or Indeed and apply, but they're not working their network,
mm-hmm.
asking individuals to help them find the next position.
Well, it's the whole thing. I think they're not mm-hmm. looking for opportunities. They're not going out and networking. They're not
yeah.
maintaining the network that they already have.
Yeah.
They just sort of live in, I'm not sure, they live in this void of, I hate my job, but I don't like what it takes to get one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, have spurts of energy, and then it dies off.
Yeah.
It's difficult as an executive coach to support this kind of a person because
yeah.
once you get the momentum going,
yeah.
you know, you got to push through all resistance and not let that momentum go away because that's the coin at the end of the rainbow is if you have to push through your resistance.
Yes.
You know, nobody loves job searching.
No one does.
No one. No, really, no one loves it. So the whole process is another job on top of the job you have, and maybe you have a family, so, you know, it's a
yeah.
third job. But
right.
there's no easy shortcut to this process.
Yeah, so that's part of, but you're using the word process, and I think that's part of it. Someone who just applies for one job, they're hoping that in taking one action,
mm-hmm.
the whole problem will be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, it is a process. Right. And I think actually for if you are someone who has a hard time reaching out or building your network, that it's very important to at least take actions to get engaged in activities outside of work where you mm-hmm. could meet opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I have one client who's very shy, but she does charitable work where she meets the members of the board or she meets the, you know, the staff of the organization. And they have led her to many good opportunities.
Yeah, of course. I think that when people get to know you and they see how you work, they see your work ethic, nothing bad's going to come of that. I mean, you're going to get opportunities. So I feel so bad for people that take a step and then it doesn't work out and they, you know, go, oh, okay.
Feel discouraged. Well.
Yeah, they feel hopeless is the word this person used. And that's exactly the time for you to go beyond that.
Yeah. So I'll use a phrase I've heard said, which is feelings aren't facts.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have to kind of manage your feelings. If you know that you're sensitive to rejection, if you know your confidence is not very high, then the best activity is to get out, get involved with things where you can showcase your talents in some regard and build that confidence.
You know, I've also heard some of my clients say when they go on an interview and they don't get it, they end up saying, well, it's not so bad here. Then they start to negotiate with themselves. Well, maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was. And it is. It's bad. You know, don't just because you don't want to do what it takes to get another job.
But then
it's selling yourself short, I think.
Yes, they are. But that's interesting because then we get into the grief cycle, right, which is denial, and then you get angry and you blame, and then you bargain with yourself, it's not so bad, and then you get depressed, I'll never get out of here. And then supposedly if you get to acceptance, you can take some action. But often we vacillate between denial, anger and blame, and bargaining.
You know, I don't really like using your dating analogy, but I'm going to right here and say, you know, you didn't marry the first person you met either.
Hopefully.
Well, some people it works out that way. I was not one of those. But, you know, don't you usually date a bunch of people before you find someone you connect with?
Yeah. Right.
You
know, that's exactly why people don't want to break up. They don't want to go back into the dating world.
Right. So that's what it's the same thing.
It is so very similar.
Kind
of. Yeah,
it is. You don't want to dress up and describe who you are. And, you know, in job search, it's polish up your resume, pull your outfits together, put on a good face, learn how to interview if you haven't. Many people are in jobs that have never really done a formal job search.
Right.
So that's when they need to come get you.
This is why, you know, we're always talking about building your network and maintaining your network. Then you really don't have to job search.
Right.
Good people are always sought after.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the other way of looking at it, that you're always known in your field as somebody who is worthwhile.
Yeah.
But the way you're describing these kinds of people is that they don't feel good enough about themselves. So that's probably not in line with what they can do.
Correct.
So and what do they do? Go home and...
Usually.
Yeah.
Go home. Yeah, play video games or watch TV or go shopping or drink too much or smoke or whatever they do. And I'm not saying that these are, like, you know, derelict people. I'm just saying that they really do just go home and cope, embrace, and get ready for the next day. So you do have to break out of that cycle. And I think often if you're low in confidence, you also may be a shy person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think finding something that you find interesting to work for, and I'm a big believer in donating your services so that you can be seen, is a really worthwhile activity.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, participating in your industry's events.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're doing. So you'd be educating yourself and you would be meeting like-minded people. Unless
exactly.
you absolutely hate what you're doing,
right.
It could be very interesting to get very involved that way.
That's a great idea.
All right. Well, I'm depressed. This person is. This is really hard. Another thing is to seek support.
Absolutely.
So many religious organizations have job search support groups.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're very inexpensive or just a nominal fee or free. And
right.
Seek out support. Maybe you have somebody who you've worked for who would be willing to coach you and talk to you every morning or something so that you can get some kind of emotional support.
Or someone else who's left. Maybe you really ask to be mentored by someone who managed to leave that same situation and ask them to introduce you, give you, you know, venues to be introduced to.
Mm-hmm.
That could be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't give up hope, I would say, and understand that this is scary. Change is more... fear-provoking for some than it is for others. If that's true for you, you just do want to get the support, as Kathy's mentioning, and take some basic steps, really simple steps. Things like updating even your LinkedIn profile could be a big deal for some individuals.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a commercial break and come back with question number two.
Ever feel like you or your company could use a 20-minute therapy session? Well, K-Squared has your back. Simply download a K-Talk, plug in those ear pods, or gather a group of your coworkers and feel better instantly. Well, almost. Each K-Talk covers a specific topic and costs a fraction of what a traditional therapy session would. Feeling stressed by your workload? There's a K-Talk for that. Working with someone who's done you wrong? There's a K-Talk for that. Can't ask for a raise, need a vacation, hate your boss? K-Talk, K-Talk, K-Talk. Just go to ksquaredenterprises.com and purchase the K-Talk that fits your situation. Now back to our show.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Logan, what's our next question?
I'm the director of research at a pharmaceutical company, and I'm facing a dilemma regarding one of my senior researchers. He's been working for me for 10 years. He's really smart and talented, but he's stuck in a role. In his earlier years, he alienated a lot of people because of his arrogance. Now, even though he's tried to change his behavior, he's still viewed as a problematic employee. How do I tell this person that he should move on?
He's branded.
Yeah.
He's just branded and he can't get out of that.
Yeah, that's really tough.
What is that, a comfort zone for him? He's comfortable in it?
Well, I think the thing, I mean, we write about it. I was thinking maybe you want to leave a copy of Working With You Is Killing Me on his desk.
And turn to the page of...
bookmark the page that has about roles, being stuck in a role. This guy is stuck in a scapegoat role, seems to me, right? So, and every company needs one of those. So it's very
hard. Every family, every friendship, we need scapegoats, it's true.
Oh, yes, we do, Kathy. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a tough one, and I think it's also a tough conversation. I mean, I was thinking, and you usually have many more ideas than I do about these kinds of things, but I was thinking that if you happen to have a conversation where he's complaining about feeling limited, or if he does feel as if he's pigeonholed, that that could be an entry way of considering other options. Maybe talk about it.
Really, really sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really sensitive because you don't, you don't want to humiliate him.
No.
This is really tough. Well, I mean, you do owe it to this person, and I've seen people do it.
You don't want to say nothing.
Right, but I think you do have to wait till they present the opening.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you agree with that idea?
Well, I do, but I think they have to say something on the line of, you know, maybe I should leave. Maybe, you know, things are not really working out here, or what you're asking me to do I don't think is right for me. I mean, you have to wait for them to say it.
Yeah. And then you say, by the way.
And then you can say, well, you know, I would understand. I would understand if you felt that you were locked in a role here and you weren't able to break free of it. And I would be happy to support you in that. I could write you a reference. I could be your support. I understand. So that you're not actually not threatening.
Yeah.
I think I once mentioned this, that I had a client who her boss sent her a job opening.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so insulting. And
that
was really, isn't that passive aggressive?
Completely.
Well, you know, so she became the enemy, that boss, and my client did everything in her power to get her fired, and I think she was successful ultimately. So you don't want to be passive aggressive, but you also don't want to say, I think it's time for you to leave. Look, if you're a business owner and you have a small company, that's one thing. But if you work in a large company, that's dangerous territory for opening up a potential lawsuit. So you can't just say, maybe it's time you go. I mean, you could. It depends on the person. It depends on the situation.
But, you know, to your point, I think if the person does say, maybe it's time for me to go, or I don't see that I have any opportunity here, I think besides just saying you're stuck in a role, you could do a little education piece about sometimes people do get branded a certain way, and that holds them back, and it's very hard to break the image that you have. you know, sort of a little education piece about it, because I think very often people wonder, what did I do to deserve this? You know, how did I get myself here?
I would also ask the person if they've ever been in this situation before.
We always ask that with our clients.
The truth is, you know, if they're not 22, they probably have been in this situation before.
Right.
Usually we have this pattern.
Yeah.
Or you can even have an open conversation. You know, look, you're stuck in this role, but I don't see you making any changes to have people perceive you in a little differently.
Uh-huh.
So you can go, or you can maybe change the perception. What would be
right?
Your
choice? This person was saying they were doing things differently,
maybe,
and still stuck.
Maybe.
He tried. He tried.
You know, we don't really know what the person.
Well, it's
did
very
or not.
Hard to change. Then we go into a whole nother conversation, which is it is not easy to change, right? Really change your behavior, and if probably under stress, if this person has a little arrogant streak, that comes out.
We've seen it. Do you remember the one woman who would break the tension in every meeting and tell a joke?
Yes.
So she was never taken seriously because she was the comic in the office. Mm-hmm. We really helped her not do that, and boy, was she taken seriously.
Yes.
It took a while.
Yeah.
But
I'm just thinking she left.
She did leave. It's true.
When she was finally taken serious, she's like, I'm going somewhere where I'm treated better.
Right. She realized she wanted to go. Right. After she found the love of her life in the workplace. Anyway, things worked out well for her.
They did.
Crazy office.
Yeah.
We've but seen actually, it. That is, it's interesting, too, because if you do break the pattern, and maybe this is someone who could do well with some executive coaching as well. Which is another thing you could suggest that they enlist, right? But if they do break the pattern, they may decide for themselves, I don't really want to be here anymore.
I mean, this definitely takes a little bit of self-enlightenment to be very aware that you're stuck in a role that you created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your behavior had people label you and brand you as the scapegoat, and that you played a role in it. You would have to take responsibility for the fact that you played a role in it. What, Catherine, like a light bulb just went off?
No, actually, a client that I worked with who had been traumatized by a bullying boss finally owned her part in the deal 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. What was
she
it?
She said that she knew that she had an attitude towards him.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that she kind of rolled her eyes. She knew that she didn't respect him. And so she went to the man and said, I'm sorry for my behavior. And the whole thing changed.
Amazing.
Wow.
That's why my eyes lit up.
That's a good story.
Yeah. It took a lot, though, because he had treated her so horribly. So, again, when you're locked, she was a scapegoat for him, right? And so she was locked in this role. And so she was never able to kind of own, what am I doing that's feeding into this? She was just busy trying to protect herself from his behavior.
Right. Well, it's a perfect example of what I was saying.
Yes.
Which is that if this person were to take responsibility, and I mean, but that takes a lot of work. You'd have to be in therapy.
Or something.
Weekend intensive workshops where really saw your side of how you contributed to this and then went around and apologized. You could turn this around. We've seen that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say it's easier to leave, which in the short run it is, but you might do it again. You might duplicate that whole role thing again in your next workplace if you don't really figure out your role in it.
So the person asking this question is the boss. Are we saying...
We went far away from the original question.
No, but it's actually good because I think it's a good place to come back to, because it could be that it's not just about telling the person to move on. It's about addressing why they are stuck.
Exactly. Or what they're doing to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And you may know or you may not know.
Right. And asking them if they have they ever considered what is it, what how they may be feeding into the situation.
I mean, it's going a little bit beyond of the role of a boss.
Yes.
If you really want to go that personal with somebody.
Boss/counselor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, some bosses are.
Yeah. And if you have a 10-year relationship, you may have that level of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's deep. So for any of you that are listening that feel you're caught in a role, I would pick up a copy of Working With You Is Killing Me and read that chapter on roles. And you really do have to own your your part in it. And, you know, the roles thing is always so interesting to me because they start in your family of origin. You took a role on, right?
Oh, yes, you did.
Okay, so I'm the entertainer in my family. Who are you?
I'm the hero peacemaker.
Do you know what you are, Logan?
My best guess would be the caretaker.
Yeah. So then that tends to be, you know, the role that we then bring forward.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because it's the most comfortable and it was accepted.
Yes.
Although not always.
Well, it got you the goods that you needed at the time.
At the time.
Yeah. Usually.
It stops.
And that includes if you're a rebel, you know, if you're the one who sees yourself as the truth teller in the room. That's in you. Part of it is by design. You're naturally funny and entertaining. You know, I naturally like harmony and try to work at that in whatever situation you're in. But so part of it is sort of innate, and then the rest is just what happens over time and how we keep building those roles.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope that was helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I think these are great questions in terms of, you know, how do you keep yourself really out there, prominent and desirable?
And how do you keep your career and your work life dynamic, not mm-hmm. static?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that there's a certain energy that you're infusing into it and new opportunities that you're allowing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Seeking.
Yep.
So that's it.
All right, so join us next time for another My Crazy Office. And in the meantime, tweet us your stories and advice about leaving a job that you've been at for too long. Vote for us on Podcast Land and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Don't forget to send your questions to info@mycrazyoffice.co.
My Crazy Office is produced in New York City at K Squared Studios. Stay crazy.